Welcome to Crossbody of Work. My name is Devin.
I am Javier.
And this week we look at the career of a man with many, many names, many, many gimmicks.
Ooh, God, man. A conductor.
A conductor, yes. A working class man.
A prize fighter.
A voodoo doctor.
Just like a TV guy.
A Karen.
Guy who works in the TV industry.
Yeah, eventually, a Karen. We are looking at Charles Wright. Welcome to Crossbody Work, a show where we look at wrestlers' career through five of the most important matches. And Charles Wright is a man whose matches span four separate gimmicks.
Yeah.
Which
all of them being decently impactful to very impactful.
Memorable to,
yes,
at least notable for what they brought to the WWF at the time. Because again, most of his work, pretty much all of his work in the WWF. Hey, a reminder, if you're not watching this on YouTube, if you are, hit that like, hit that subscribe. But if you're not, go check out our YouTube channel already. We have started our series called Wrestler Revisited. We just did our first episode on Eddie Guerrero, who was the first episode of our regular podcast. We have other content like our draft content. And coming this week, we'll announce it right now, we're doing another mini-sode exclusive to YouTube. And we are looking at the clusterfuck that was Brawl for All.
Yes.
It was bad. And we're going to talk about it.
It was so fun, though. We had a great time. You know, the Brawl for All, I don't think that it's about the violence. I think it's about the friends we made along the way.
And it's about the clips of Charles Wright where you see him getting absolutely dusted.
Yeah, my man got toasted. He got folded.
He folded like a cheap lawn chair. All right, Charles Wright, legitimately a tough man. I would never say that to his face. He's a terrifying man. He's a big dude. All the respect in the world. But like, that's what the Brawl for All was. It was a bunch of terrifying dudes shoot punching each other, which I'm going nowhere near it. Nowhere near it.
I'm just saying, I think 8-Ball was in it.
Yes.
I'm taking down 8-Ball. 8-Ball is the one that's going down.
I'm taking down nobody in that entire thing. I don't think there's a wrestler alive that I could take down.
Oh, brother, I'm telling you right now, Enzo Amore is getting this work.
Jesus. All right. What do you know about Charles Wright?
I know that he pretty much lives the gimmick. The guy owns some entertainment clubs, and he runs them, and he's very successful doing so.
Yes, he manages Cheetah's Strip Club in Las Vegas, Nevada. At least that's what he had been doing for a while. Near the end of his career, now in his retirement. But in terms of the wrestler, Charles Wright first entered professional wrestling in the way that I think lots of people yearn to be discovered. He was being noticed while he was tending bar. Wrestlers were filming the movie Over the Top, and they were involved in the movie, and they were like, hey, you know, with your large body type, because he's a big dude, and his good look, they're like, you should get into wrestling. Like, how big do you think he's listed as?
He's got to be all, I mean, considering he had a match against Taker, and he wasn't that much smaller, I'd say he's probably like 6'8".
He's listed 6'6", 330. 6'6", 330.
You know, this is one person where I feel like they underlisted him on
I
the
think
height.
They underlisted him too. I absolutely think they did. So
unless we're overlisting The Undertaker badly.
So he seeked out Larry Sharp in the Monster Factory to get into the business. He then parlayed his training job into a job with Jerry Lawler in the United States Wrestling Association. So he was in the USWA. And then he gave the name Soul Taker, which is one of the tattoos he has. It says Soul Taker, which is terrifying.
I like that. That's honestly, I kind of like that. That's freaking sick. Why isn't that like someone's nickname in the UFC or like MMA in general? Like, you know how, you know,
we're going to get told by somebody. We're going to get told by somebody like, oh, it's actually this guy.
This guy who's fucking 20 and 42 who fights for fucking not even, he's in one championship wrestling in Singapore. Like, congratulations, bro.
You were very passionate about that. He was brought to WWF in 91 under the suggestion of his friend, The Undertaker. He competed briefly under the name Sir Charles because his name is Charles Wright, and Charles Barkley was good at the basketball at the same time. He said the gimmick was never really developed, and when he was talking about it, he says he only remembers wearing ropes he purchased from another wrestler to the ring. So, like, not a lot there. But in 92, January 92, he was repackaged with a very infamous gimmick. He was the voodoo doctor, Papa Shango. It was not well received at the time.
Voodoo Kid Mafia?
It was not very well received at the time. He had the cryptic rituals. He had the cult thing. He had, like, the ability to cast spells and make people vomit. He could control. He was like the first one who could control the ring lights. Like,
nah, man. The craziest thing about Papa Shango will always be that feud with Ultimate Warrior.
Yes.
That is the craziest shit. Just the way that he made Warrior, like, throw up. Obviously, we covered it on this podcast a few weeks ago for the Psycho Sid two-parter. The infamous missed cue on the rundown that he completely botched.
Yeah,
some infamous moments from our guy Charles.
He misses the run-in at WrestleMania 8, has his feud with Ultimate Warrior actually end up going nowhere. They don't actually end up having a blow-off match. And instead, the match we have for Papa Shango is him challenging for the WWF title. It's Saturday Night's Main Event 31. This was aired on November 14th, 1992. And it's Papa Shango versus Good Canadian Boy and current world champion, I believe, for the first time.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. First time. I feel like I don't need to ask this question, but, like, what are your thoughts on the Papa Shango gimmick?
I think that during a time period where everyone had a gimmick except for fucking Bret Hart, apparently, it was fine. I don't know. Like, you got to think, like, we're, like, a couple years away from, like, Duke the Dumpster Drozzy and shit like that, you know? Like, for him to be, like, a voodoo fucking doctor, how, like, the Undertaker is an undead zombie, you know?
Yeah, but he does it differently. The world of wrestling hated Papa Shango. It was booed by fans. It was voted worst gimmick, most embarrassing wrestler in the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Awards for 92. Everybody hated it. The only person who didn't was Bret Hart. Bret Hart is on record of having liked the character, and specifically Charles Wright's in-ring work. Like, he really liked the way he worked. It's just that he didn't think that the storyline with Ultimate Warrior did him any favors.
You know, I do have to say, I think Charles Wright has a very unique style, because he works big, but he works fast without working stiff, if that makes sense. Like, he's very, let's say he's doing, like a back suplex. He's the type of, like, guy who, when he does, let's say he'll do a back suplex, he, like, puts a lot of, like, movement into it, you know? He let's say he's doing, spoiler alert, the guy's the Godfather. He's doing the Godfather, like, Ho Train run, splash into the corner. Like, he puts some gusto behind it, and then once he gets there, he kind of, like, opens up as like, wide as he can. Like, he puts his limbs out and everything and then closes it. Like, that's not something you see a lot. Like,
I think he's going to explain this for you? Like, this is going to, when you hear this, you go, oh, this makes a lot of sense based on, wow, he's a big, but he works a really agile style. When he attended the University of Nevada, he was an offensive tackle. I feel like that tracks, like, the nimbleness, the agility, the ability to control the body. Like, that's such an offensive tackle thing to do. Like, if he was just a big bruiser, you get thrown inside. You play guard. Either you have short arms or you don't have the quick feet. You end up in the inside. He has the outside ability, so he's, you know, protecting the blind side of somebody, I don't know, mid-80s.
I mean, listen, you can't say the guard thing, because, like, freaking Quentin Nelson is as nimble an offensive lineman as there are out there.
There are exceptions to every rule. All right, let's talk about this match between Papa Shango and Bret Hart. It's not very good, but I do love the getup of Papa Shango.
I love the pre-match promo Bret cuts. He starts talking about Stu Hart. He drops a dungeon message, says that he learns from every single match, because, you know, he said it was a dream when he got the IC title.
Yeah.
And look at where he is now. He's the WWF champion. And this is an impossible thing that could have happened for him. Bret Hart as a babyface is so fucking good as a babyface. Like, when Bret Hart wants you to love him, he's really fucking good at making you love him.
He's very lovable when he wants to be, but also he's detestable when he wants to be. That's the balance of Bret Hart.
So makes him one of the best, man.
In terms of the actual wrestling, I don't really want to talk about all of it. I just, what I walked away from this match,
not a lot,
thinking is there's not a lot for Shango to do, but very similar to your assessment, pretty athletic every time he's doing anything. Like,
yeah,
the selling's not bad. There's like good worked punches for, again, for only being in the business for what, at this point, 3 years. It's pretty good
for someone who doesn't have a background in it, really. Like, you know, he's not someone who, like, oh, I had wrestler friends and all this stuff. Like, he was just a bartender.
Yeah.
You know? And then
he became boys with the guys working on Over the Top.
Yeah. At one point, Brett does a monkey flip off the out of the corner, and he sells it really well. Like, there's not many big men you could do that shit to. Like, can you imagine doing a monkey flip to, like, fucking Braun Strowman? Or even just, like, Otis, you know?
There is a spot by Brett I want to talk about where he's blowing up Shango with shoulder blocks, but he won't go down. And then he hits a running crossbody instead. Shango kicks out, sends him to the outside. Brett slides back in the ring through Shango's legs, clotheslines him to the outside, then does the slingshot plancha over the top. And I was like, oh, God, Brett, when you're just, like, feeling it, you're so good. You're so good.
He's in his bag, man. Can you imagine Bret Hart nowadays?
Like, in...
Man.
I was going to say, nowadays, he's just upset on Twitter about Goldberg.
No, just taking, like 92, 93 Brett and just transporting them over to 2013, like, it would be,
it'd be really
just
good.
Like watching Danielson. That's what it would just be like.
It would be really, really good. the one thing I don't like is that Shango's big move is the trap squeeze. You're my trap squeeze that hit the bandeau. I don't like it.
I hate it so much.
It's a lot of it. There is also a spot where he tries the bear hug, and Brett puts a stop to it by shining up Shango's bald head and giving him a big bite, which is such a dickish thing to do. Because here's the other thing, is Charles Wright has hair, as we see later on.
Yeah, he's got the Kobe going right now, though. He's just got the head cut down. It's a little bit of hair. You can see it.
Talk about the finish. Let's go right to the finish.
So, at one point, first off, my favorite spot of the match is a comedy spot, I feel like, but it's not really. Brett goes
head shining?
No, Brett goes over the top with the sunset flip, Shango go down, and he's like doing the whole like balancing thing, like, he gets his balance back, and he's like, "Fuck you, Brett." And normally in this situation, the big man would just grab the person by the neck and then lift them up or whatever, but he goes for a punch and Brett moves out of the way and my man just punches the mat and he's like, fuck.
It is pretty good.
The end of this, Brett hits a side Russian leg sweep for a near fall, big back body drop for a near fall, middle rope flying clothesline for a near fall, and then the actual finish, which is Shango goes for a splash in the corner. Brett moves out of the way, Shango falls backwards. And then he like leaves his legs up, so he like falls back, and then legs come up. Brett grabs the legs, slaps on that sharpshooter. Like 5 seconds later, the ref goes like,
ding, ding, ding. Papa Shango would appear in another pay-per-view match, dark match, against Tito Santana at WrestleMania 9. Santana would win. He would then be seen infrequently, and he made two final televised appearances against Enhancement Talents in June and July of 93. He would quit. He would work for the USWA for a bit, actually winning their world title and losing it to Owen Hart. Interesting. And he actually said that he didn't like that the Papa Shango character won the USWA world title. He said they were pandering to the Memphis, like the black audience in Memphis. So he's like, I didn't earn this. You just wanted a black champion. So
that sucks.
It does suck for him. So then he would leave. He would return to bartending and then come back to WWF in January 95. So 3 years after his last debut, under the heel gimmick of Kama, nicknamed the Supreme Fighting Machine, a scrappy and competitive shoot wrestler inspired by UFC fighter Kimo Leopoldo. That was the inspiration.
Kimo Leopoldo? I don't know Kimo Leopoldo.
So you never had weird uncles who showed you the original UFC tapes, did you?
No, absolutely not. But I've seen the first UFC, like UFC 1. I've seen it many times.
I don't think it's 1. I think it's like in the interim before, like right before they started making rules. You know what I mean? Like there's like that weird sweet spot where it's not the first one, but it's a little better. I think he might have been in there. I'm probably wrong. If you're an MMA person, tell us in the comments how wrong we are. That's okay. We're not MMA people.
Yeah,
it's okay.
Listen, but I'm okay being wrong.
I still remember being like way too young and my uncle popping in a VHS tape and being like, this is the Ultimate Fighting Championship. And I saw the, like, I don't know his name, but the gigantic fucking dude get his shit rocked. Oh my, what a life-changing experience that was. I was like, I thought I could fight people then, and then I quickly learned that I could not.
Nah, fam.
Pretty much right after his debut, Kama would join the Million Dollar Corporation, because that's where you put heels when you don't know what else to do with them. They're like, well, money.
Feed him to DiBiase.
He would feud with The Undertaker, and he would steal the urn at WrestleMania 11, have it melted down and turned into some Mr. T style bling.
Bro, my man melted the urn that gives The Undertaker powers down and turned it into a Cuban link. Do you know how crazy that is?
It's a fantastic and despicable thing that I want more heels to do.
I like to think that Rick Ross owns that necklace right now.
I would believe it if you told me that. The
accusation!
The bling would remain in his possession until November of 95 when King Mabel seized it, our boy, in a feud with The Undertaker. But in the actual feud, we get this match at SummerSlam 1995 versus The Undertaker. And of course, since it's versus The Undertaker, it is Kama in a casket match.
Yep.
We get a Paul Bearer promo ahead of time, naturally. There it is. You'll witness more history when Undertaker puts an end to the Supreme Fighting Machine. And apparently, Kama was committing crimes against Undertaker's creatures of the night.
Well, yeah, because I don't know if you watched the... clearly, you did, because you saw the chain part. But there was at one point, someone, like, after he, like, tore apart a couple of Undertaker things, a creature of the night, who was just, like, these random people.
They're just emo kids. In black shirts, went
in the ring to like pick up the mess, and Kama came back and just fucked them up.
Yeah, it was really weird. I just didn't know that Undertaker had like groupies.
I don't know. I knew about the druids.
Well, the druids are different. I feel like he like controls them with his mind power, his wizardness. But like these are just like MCR fans. Like that's all these are.
I guess by this point it'd be what is it, mid-90?
Yeah.
That's probably like what, Green Day fan?
Yeah, like we hadn't gotten emo yet. We were still like sad about stuff, but like we hadn't gotten emo yet.
I'm reading a book about alt rock and punk bands from that time period just after Nirvana that like sold out. It's like Green Day and freaking Jimmy Eat World's in there.
Listen, I've been on record many times, this podcast, my other podcast, so excited to sell out. Do not get me wrong.
Yeah. Yep, not even close. I love all y'all. Me and my underground folks, we love all of you. Spotify offers me to back tomorrow. I don't even have Spotify. I'm there.
Yeah, the only exception is when people sell out and like become harmful to other people. Looking at you, Charlie Caruso. Yeah.
I know what Charlie Caruso did.
She joined OutKick and Clay Travis and Fox News.
Wasn't she on ESPN?
She sure was. Anyways, not a fan of that. Kind of disappointing for Charlie. But let's talk about this casket match. I'm not going to talk about all the action in this because it's a casket match. I don't know what the best casket match is, but I know that it isn't this one.
Is it the Royal Rumble 98?
It probably is.
Taker Michaels one?
It probably is.
Mine is the Mark Henry one, personally.
I like that Mark Henry was at one point being pitched to end the streak. I love that.
Love that. King, man. Love that. A king. Anyway, so Taker is immediately on top with punches in the corner. He's pissed. See, this is what I love. I love when there's a heated rivalry. There's a reason for Taker to be pissed. So he's like, you know what? I'm going to come out here. I'm throwing hands. We're not locking up, motherfucker.
That's true. There's lots of action. And again, going through it all bit by bit would just be a lot. What there's I want to talk about.
Action.
I want to talk about the casket cam. With the first time we get to the casket, you know, Undertaker hits the old school, like you said, and then he's asking for the casket to be opened. And all of a sudden, the camera switches, and we're just in the casket, which is not a viewpoint I wanted to see until I couldn't see anymore. You know what I mean?
Nah.
Nah.
I got a good one. So when I saw that, it reminded me. So I watched hockey this weekend for the games, two game sevens, baby. Bruins, historic collapse, tragic. I don't give a damn. But then my Seattle Kraken.
Yes.
The next game, we do it, baby. We take down the Avalanche. You sorry sure to my close personal friend, Cale Makar.
Yes.
But they take him down. Now we're going through. I don't know what the hell, who we're facing or what the hell is going on there. But shout out to hockey. But at one point, one of the nets like came loose or like came off or something.
Yeah.
And they showed there's like a net camera.
There sure camera is.
In the net. Now, one, I don't know what the hell this captures. Realistically, in like the actual flow of a game, but two, for this specific purpose, might have been the best camera usage I've ever seen in any sport.
This is exactly why they have that camera, is for this specific purpose.
When they have to fix the net,
well, if anyone crashes in the net, they'd be like, oh, and here's the angle from the goalie's point of view, and it's just like, it's great. So the fact they have the casket cam, fantastic. Also, this brings up a very important question I have for you. Do you know the difference between a casket and a coffin?
You know, I'm going to tell you right now, literally until this moment right now when you just asked me that, I never thought to think that those were two different things. I never even thought to think about the, like, I don't. Is the coffin longer and, like, shaped like a diamond?
So the shape is the most important thing. So unlike caskets, coffins have six sides. So they go out and then back in. Right?
So hexagon.
Yes, and you're a hexagoner if you're in one. But the top of the coffin is wider than the bottom, and then the coffin has a removable lid while the casket has like the the hinges.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's also one has Dracula.
One is what Darby Allin drops. That's about it.
No, that's the beat.
No, Darby Allin does not drop the beat. Yeah, Darby Allin has listened to the same Avenged Sevenfold album.
Nah, man. He's listening to freaking G.G. Allin and like just the weirdest. My man loves Rancid.
Oh, yeah. So in terms of like, give me your favorite spot in this match.
I don't know that I have a favorite spot in this match. But oh, actually, that's a lie. That is a dead lie. At one point, Kama starts punching Taker out of the ring, like to get him out of the ring, and DiBiase starts beating on him.
Yeah.
And when that happens, they just turn the camera over to the other side, and you see Paul Bearer, who has taken off his blazer.
Yep.
And is just like going over, ready to kick some fucking ass, like with his goddamn 300-pound self. And then there's two tiny ass looking refs compared to Paul Bearer, just holding him back, and he cannot get through them.
Paul Bearer is a good dad. You know what? Like, he gets the world's best dad mug.
Are we gonna? This is 95, right?
Yeah.
The same year that he turned on the Undertaker.
Yeah, I mean, but we don't need to worry about that yet. The other spot that I liked a lot is it gets Taker into the casket. Taker is in the casket. He grabs the top rope, skins the cat, uses his legs to bring Kama into the casket instead. I was like, yo, Taker is always super athletic. Kama in this match, he does some good heel work. He shows the thing that you have to do in these matches. You have to be afraid of the casket. You have to be afraid of like the weird supernatural side of it. But like at the beginning of the match, he doesn't back away from Taker. He's throwing a bunch of haymakers. His moveset is definitely different than Papa Shango. He has differentiated it.
It's more strike based. It's high impact. At one point, he has too much dip on his chip because my man is trying to go for a power driver on top of the casket. Gets back body drop back into the ring.
The shakiest casket, by the way.
Oh my god, that thing is put on like there's one 2x4 that goes down the middle and two 2x4s that go down the sides, and they are not connected with each other.
There's no cross joints. None of that.
Yeah, there's no stability in this thing. They are like, oh, we don't care. There's a power slam in the ring, and then there's a side headlock spot.
For a long time. But let's move instead to the finish. Kama's escaping from the... So they're both in the casket because there was a clothesline by Taker and they both went in the casket. Kama starts to escape. Taker pulls him back in. Both men get out. Kama catches Taker with a swinging neckbreaker that people were treating. The
weirdest looking swinging neckbreaker I've ever seen.
And commentary was treating it like a finish. I was like, oh, that might be his finisher. For $100, you could not get me to name Kama's finisher.
That is a weird finisher for a guy who's supposed to be like an Ultimate Fighter to have.
You don't see Ultimate Fighting Championships ending with a swinging neckbreaker like that? That's not...
No, because usually they knock each other the fuck out or choke each other the fuck out.
That's true. Taker gets a choke slam, points to the casket, tombstone, rolls Kama in, wins. Yeah, that's what happens.
Yeah, go home. Yeah. Everyone goes home happy.
Everybody goes home. Everybody's happy, happy, happy. So he then would join the Nation of Domination. But that's actually later. In the interim, he left after the 96 Royal Rumble and had verbally agreed to join WCW as the enforcer for the New World Order.
What?
But chose not to go to WCW after speaking to Ron Simmons, a.k.a. Farouk.
I like that.
He then learned that WCW signed Virgil to be the enforcer instead while watching Nitro at home, and learned that they had signed Virgil for a less than what they had offered Wright. So he is all about his bag.
It's fucked up.
It is a little fucked up. We're going to take a break. When we get back, we're not looking at the combo stuff and Nation of Domination stuff. No, no, no. When we get back, it's time to move on to the Godfather. Back from the break, Kama would become Kama Mustafa, like we said. He would join the Nation of Domination as Farouk's first recruit. He's a lieutenant. He stood with the Nation when Rocky Maivia became the leader. He was, you know, Rocky and Mark Henry and D'Lo Brown. Later, that little nugget, Owen Hart, you know?
Owen Hart.
What a time.
Wow.
And actually, I didn't know this. While he was in the Nation, he started being called the Godfather of the Nation. Like, that's where the term Godfather came from. Is he's like, you know, he had that aura, so he was the Godfather of the Nation. And then he changed to, of course, the Godfather that all of us know from the Attitude Era, surrounded by... I got the gimmick. I understood. I didn't know all about it, obviously. I was seven. But I knew that everybody liked the Godfather and that the ladies that he brought out were very pretty. And I was like, okay, this man seems
easy.
This man seems to have many female friends. He must be a good listener. He must,
he's a generous tipper.
Generous tipper? A lovely fella. Because, he came up with the Ho Train, which in reality were either actresses, up and coming female wrestlers, or girls from local strip clubs. That's how they would recruit the hoes. Two famous wrestlers ended up being hoes. I'm going to stop saying hoes at some point because it's a lot.
But it's what they, you know, it's the gimmick.
It is what the gimmick was. Can you name the two female wrestlers that were part of the Ho
Train? Lita and Victoria.
You are absolutely 100% correct. Ivory was offered a role in the Ho Train, but was discouraged from taking it by Luna Vachon. For a long time, Godfather would win matches by offering the services of his friends to his opponent and just them walking out of the match. The gimmick was, as you can imagine, in 1999, incredibly popular, which led to Godfather winning the Intercontinental Championship.
Going back and watching like the Attitude Era, back when the network was around, he was legitimately for a period of time there in like it was in 1999. He was, aside from like Stone Cold, Rock, and maybe Mankind, he was by far the most over person.
Well, that's what it was with the Attitude Era. Was yes, the wrestling was bad, like objectively bad. The storylines were
not
anywhere
great.
Anywhere between like horrifically offensive to nonsensical to like fine. But every single person on the card had a very defined gimmick, was allowed to interact with everybody else on the card. It felt like an ecosystem. Monday Night Raw was a thing. It was a living entity, and every week, things, you'd interact with different people. It's the same thing as like when we get the like APA backstage segments, and we'd get Commissioner Foley and his backstage segments, and you'd have people up and down the card fighting each other. Like, Godfather's biggest win, according to Wikipedia at least, is when on the March 16th, 2000 episode of SmackDown, when he beat Triple H, who was WWF champion at the time, due to interference from Shane McMahon in the Big Show. Like, Godfather had a match against Triple H, and yeah, by technicality, he won, but still won.
A win is a win.
Let's look at him defending the IC title at Backlash 1999 against Goldust, who he had beaten for the title 2 weeks earlier on Raw. Goldust in this era has the Blue Meanie, who is weird.
Mommy.
Yeah, he is the original Rhea Ripley.
Mommy.
Meanie says, for the girls who want to be me and the girls, or the guys who want to be me and the girls who came to see me. Sure. Godfather.
You want to see the grind?
Godfather has no hose, and then like comes out like he forgot something, and then it's like, all right, and brings up five lovely ladies.
He gets on the mic and goes, first off, my one note here is the Ho Train was a crazy, crazy idea.
I don't think we've really
Grand Slam gimmick though.
I don't think we've really dissected what an insane time this was, where they're like, the thing that's going to get this man over is just beautiful women, different women every week
that he literally prostitutes out.
Yeah, it's never said explicitly, but it is implied heavily.
I mean, listen, you got to think, you know, my man Cubs here, he goes, because he does this before every match. You know you're over as fuck when before the match even starts, they hand you a microphone.
Yeah.
And he goes, it's time once again for everyone to hop aboard the Ho Train.
The Godfather pre-match promos, which we'll talk about in our promo segment next, they were... You know how Rox is like just like a word search almost? Like, which things is he going to say? And like jumble them up? Godfather's was... It was more Enzo and Cass style, where you knew exactly what he was going to say, and the crowd ate it up every time.
And sometimes he'd switch it up, like in this instance, where he goes, for all the true players out there that know that the Godfather be pipping these hoes nationwide, man, I want you to reach down and light one for the Godfather 420 style and say, pip it ain't easy!
He's also not offering any hoes to Goldust, because according to Godfather, his girls don't like no scrubs.
Don't want no scrubs. It's the way he said it too. He goes, don't want no scrubs.
This match is fine. It's funny.
Yeah.
It's funny.
It was entertaining. Honestly, I'm going to say this and you're going to be like, really? This is my recommendation for the week.
I'm not surprised.
I thought beginning to end, this whole thing is probably like, this whole clip is, I would guess, somewhere between like 8 and 9 minutes.
I think it's 8 minutes.
It is entertaining as fuck.
Yeah.
Entertaining as fuck. I watched this on normal speed. I was entertained the whole way through. The match itself, whatever. It's not about the match. It's about the spectacle of entertainment that you're watching.
Yeah. Like, you know, Godfather has some good spots here. He gets a back body drop. He gets the clothesline. Tosses Goldie to the outside. Meanie trips up Godfather to give the advantage back to Goldust. You know, he gets the clothesline. Gets the drop down strike. Then we get what the whole match was leading to, and it's really, really funny. So Meanie, who, if you didn't know, is the inspiration for LeBron James, gives some powder to Goldust, and Goldust is going to, you know, blind Godfather. Meanie does the distraction to the ref, and what happens to Goldust and his powder?
Godfather punches it back into his face, and then Goldust just starts wildly swinging. And Godfather's jabbing him to hell while he's doing it.
And then Godfather just... Meanie comes in the ring to defend Goldie. And Godfather just kind of pushes Meanie into Goldust's wild swings. And Goldust just lays into his little boy.
Goldust gets him, puts him in the corner, Goldust style, gets him trapped there. And then goes back, comes forward, and just punts him right in the dick.
Shattered dreams, baby. Walks into a karate kick from the Godfather. One, two, Godfather actually gets up because he sees Meanie coming in to break up the pin. And when he does, Meanie goes headfirst into Goldust's Golden Globes.
Yep. He whips Meanie into Goldust in the corner. Then he does his whole train running splash. Meanie gets out of the ring. Goldust gets hit with a Death Valley driver, which is the finisher for Godfather, which is awesome. One, good two, finish. Three. Godfather retains his belt. I need to tell you, my favorite part of this match is actually a line from Jerry the King Lawler.
What world are we in?
I know, but it's at one point. It's pretty early on in the match. He goes, Blue Meanie had an experience with a hoe one time. She told him not on the first date.
Poor Meanie. All right, our promo for The Godfather sets up what is the remainder of his Godfather run, where he's no longer the Godfather, but the Good Father. So Right to Censor goes after the hoe train. This is Raw, July 17th, 2000. As of now, Right to Censor, the most annoying group of Karens since right now.
Well, it's just Steven Richards at this point.
Technically, Bull Buchanan had joined Right to Censor. He had joined Right to Censor the week before, I believe. Godfather comes out, hits his usual promo. You already covered most of it. It's time Roll once again.
Daddy for this pimp daddy.
And say, pimp it ain't easy. Are there any pimps up in this house? Et cetera, et cetera.
It's great. It's good it's shit. It's
great stuff. I would like you to rank these like usual intro promos.
Oh my God. Well, I feel like number one has to be. Well, actually, you're giving me them. Go ahead.
I'm going to give you three, and I want you to rank them and see if I missed one. Godfathers, New Age Outlaws, Enzo and Cass.
Oh, well, number one is the New Age Outlaw. That's what I was going to say is number one. It has to be.
It has to be.
Two, I'm actually going to say The Godfather.
Yeah.
Just because you're seeing it here. Like, I love this shit. Yeah. And then three is going to be Enzo and Cass.
Are there any that I missed?
Jericho had a couple during his little
I think the thing is he's had so much variety in his gimmicks, and I'm like, you know what I mean?
Like Rock, but Rock always switched it up.
Yeah. Like Rock's Millions and Millions is up there for sure.
Millions.
Yeah. Or finally.
Millions. Obviously the Paul Heyman, Brock Lesnar thing.
Oh yeah, the Paul Heyman introduction's very good too.
Roman just going, acknowledge me.
You know, I also realized that it's kind of been written out of WWE history, but there's a clip where Enzo and Cass do not have microphones and they do the entire intro without the microphones. And I'm like, that might be one of the most impressive things I've seen.
London one?
I believe so, where they're so over that they do not need the microphone. Plus, anything to see Enzo doing this little before he does the fucking thing is so funny. It's so funny. This is also why you need to watch these on YouTube, so you can see all of our weird things we do during the recording. Yeah, I think I nailed that. You did. All right. So, Steven is here because he's the worst. Even though also, you love Steven Richards. There's
face when the Right to Censor music hits. I can't even recreate it. It's like he wanted. It's genuinely just like, just like a so disappointed, like what the fuck, annoyed. It's this a mixture of just all those feelings.
This is also where I realized that there is a notable name in the hoe train this week.
Go on.
Victoria is the one in the leopard print skirt and black top.
Oh, good for her. I didn't notice. I never look at the hoes.
She'll eventually get powerbombed through a table by the good father, but we're not there yet.
Stevie Richards is goated. I don't give a damn. He says, what's wrong with these people? They cheer for violence. They cheer for indecency. Yeah. And worst of all, they cheer for Godfather and his hoes. He asks where the morals have gone.
Yep.
Says, Stevie, Godfather.
Stevie is censoring things. Fiber. And Godfather says, I do know one thing. That's your censoring behind is costing me the hardcore title right now, because Godfather's supposed to be fighting Steve Blackman for the hardcore title. He calls Steven down to the ring, but Steven stops halfway because violence has never solved anything. And he won't sully his hands unless it's in self-defense, and Godfather says he better start defending himself right now, and runs after
him. Chases it up, and then B-Squared comes out and attacks him.
Bull Buchanan, for those of you who are not up to the John Cena debut times.
Sure. And then, a little after the attack and all this stuff, there's a backstage promo right at the end of the clip, where Godfather is holding his neck. He's hurt. He's talking to Michael Cole, who has frosted tips. And he goes...
Any excuse to talk about Michael Cole's frosted tips.
Yes, man. Stevie Richards thinks he could tell people what to think, what to wear, how to think, how to act. Man, he doesn't know what people want. And now he's going to bring B-Squared. He didn't say B-Squared. I'm saying it. On me? Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to show them both how hard pimping really is.
The next week, Godfather would lose a match to Bull Buchanan and have to give up pimping.
Unbelievable.
Literally the next week. He then joined Right to Censor and became the Good Father. We are going to take a break. When we get back, we have two matches for Right to Censor. Back from the break, and I didn't realize until we started doing this how long Right to Censor really was. It was just under a year, but it was weirdly the most prominent time for Good Father / Charles Wright.
That's so weird.
Because I was like, oh, we should cover more of like his initial run as the Godfather, which was from 98 roughly till this time in 2000. His only big thing was the Intercontinental Championship. He had some fun partnerships with Val Venus because they were both the boxers. Yeah. Like he would do that. He would be very popular when he made his entrance. He would team with D'Lo Brown. Like he would do some stuff like that. But really his most like significant time was as the Good Father, where he has given up pimping and he's joined Right to Censor alongside Steven Richards and Val Venus, who's also reformed, and Ivory, and of course the Apostle B Squared.
My goat.
And they would have a match at SummerSlam 2000, and it would be the three members of Right to Censor at that time, so Steven Richards, Bull Buchanan, and the Good Father versus Too Cool, Grandmaster Sexay, Scotty Too Hotty, and of course Rikishi. The Hoes are with Too Cool, as they should be.
One of which being Victoria.
One of which is Victoria. She has now taken that power bomb through a table by Good Father already, because she was part of the Save the Hoes campaign. Which is how they... Listen, this was a big deal for the Godfather.
You have to understand, there is a reason why everyone says, don't be Captain Save a Ho. Because you can't.
The fact that Victoria would go on to have like a Hall of Fame worthy career.
Yeah. And like, is legitimately one of the greatest female wrestlers of all time.
What a wild beginning. It's like when you, it's literally like when you see The Miz on The Real World and you're like, hey, you're a world champion. Nice.
Yeah, I've never seen The Real World with The Miz. The only things I've seen are The Challenge. Like Johnny Bananas, Wes, Autumn, my boys.
Can we talk about the drip that Too Cool has? Because it's incredible.
Oh, my.
This is, to me, the peak outfit for Too Cool. It's the white pants with the black scribbles and the red writing. And it looks incredible. And Rikishi's just Rikishi.
With the fake braids, that's just not okay.
Definitely not okay. What did you think of the match?
The heat for Right to Censor. I'm honestly shocked that Right to Censor was just under a year. Like, yeah. They could have kept that going, and it would have been crazy how much heat those people would have had. They just kept, like, evolving the gimmick a little bit. Yeah. I think what kind of handcuffed them a little bit is really just the fact that they didn't have wrestlers in the group that were, like, as good. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I think... Like I am of the opinion that in modern day, you know, the Judgment Day, once Edge left the group, like, should have dissolved completely. Like, they should have just crashed and burned like crazy. But the reason why it worked is because you have Finn Balor, Damian Priest, Dominic Mysterio, and Rhea Ripley, who are all individually really fucking good. So together, they're just really fucking good.
If I had to rank the wrestling ability in Right to Censor, Ivory's first, I think.
I disagree.
Are you going to say Bull Buchanan?
No, it's fucking Stevie Richards, man.
Stevie Richards is pretty good. I just don't think WWE saw Stevie Richards as like being able to be that next level.
And that's the problem. He's the face of Right to Censor, and he isn't, you know, he's not that guy. He's at like peak capacity, an IC title holder. Yeah. Like Right to Censor should have been a gimmick that honestly could have been like a main event level gimmick if it just had a main event level talent there.
I think Godfather is also a pretty good wrestler. I don't think we've really given enough thing. We talked about how athletic he is. And in tag matches, he's kind of not as big a focal point. But Godfather, when he's in the ring, at this point, has become very crisp. And you see it actually probably best in that Goldust match. Like, he's crisp. He's very, like, nothing is wasted. He knows exactly how to get to his spots. He gets his marks. He's like a good actor. You know, he's going to get through the scene. He's going to be good.
Yeah. I would say he's a lot like this is not at all the example, but it's like a Bobby Lashley, you know? Like, Bobby Lashley could, is absolutely right there. He's a really good wrestler. He knows exactly what he's doing when he's in there. Bobby Lashley is obviously like miles ahead of where the Godfather is. I'm not
To do a lot more than they ever asked Charles Wright to do.
Yeah, it's like a Bobby Lashley, like a Miz. You know, Miz is fucking, Miz knows all his spots.
Yep.
Miz is just, he's never going to get mess up because he's the fucking Miz. He's been doing this forever.
The actual match here, Wright Center jumps in, starts throwing hands immediately. Goodfather gets clotheslined out of the ring by Rikishi. So we get Scotty Too Hotty versus B Squared to start. And we get,
oh my God,
the dopest sequence by Scotty Too Hotty. Scott Garland, here are your flowers. This is incredible.
Yeah.
Go watch this opening sequence if you're not even going to watch this match. Talk about the sequence.
So he goes up for a crossbody attempt, like just one of those things where you like go, you jump onto the middle rope, and then you know you're gonna jump back. The Shawn Michaels, yeah. And then he goes for that, but he fakes him. He doesn't
He
pump fakes a crossbody. B Squared drops down. He then just go like B Squared realizes he faked him out. He goes in for the pounce. Scotty flips over him. And then it's just like this whole sequence that just basically ends up in Scotty Too Hotty and hitting the flying crossbody for a near fall. It's crazy.
It is one of the most, it's like when you see someone come off the bench and drop 30 and you're like, wow, you're like, wow, Caleb Martin had 26 today. Like, that's incredible. And then that's Scotty Too Hotty starting this match at SummerSlam like that. I was like, that is nuts.
Yeah, just when so Mikhail Bridges gets traded to the Nets, he had 45?
Yeah, I didn't know he could go for 45. Too Cool with the double suplex to Bo Buchanan. Sexday comes in, tagged Goodfather. He gets dumped to the outside, takes a really ugly bump on the apron.
Yeah.
Like, it's right up under his shoulder. Oh, it looked I had like...
It's like his upper lat. It's
yeah, I had ugly. I had like Shawn Michaels flashbacks on the casket, and I was like, that... Like, luckily it's his side and not, like, his spine, but it didn't look awesome.
It's still, listen, man, as someone who just, like, you know, stretches his, like, himself in a weird way and feels a little tingle in his lats, like, that shit sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't even imagine what actual brute force onto it could do.
It's called getting old.
Grandmaster holds the Godfather and tells Victoria to slap him.
But Goodfather. What
does the father do here?
He breaks free. And proceeds to face wash both ladies to the ground.
Victoria especially got it bad.
The heat on the Good Father when he does this is unbelievable. I don't remember where SummerSlam 2000 was. I'm going to look it up because I'm that person. But my God.
It's brother. It's crazy. And then so
North Carolina was beside themselves.
Yes. Absolutely. So good. So B Squared comes out, takes out Grandmaster Sexay. Goodfather hits a big boot. Stevie Richards gets in the ring. He hits a power bomb for a near fall. Scoop slam. When he goes up to the top rope, though, Grandmaster Sexay crotches him and then goes up there and he hits a superplex.
He does. Superplex for Sexay. Hot tag to Rikishi.
Yeah, Enziguri hot tag to Rikishi. Lit. Absolutely crazy. Great hot tag by Rikishi here.
Right hands for everybody. Double clotheslines. Tosses Steven out of the ring. And Victoria tosses him right back in.
Yes. Too Cool. They stack all of Right to Center in the corner.
Yeah.
I think it's Scotty goes first. When he does so, I think it's Goodfather falls out of the corner. Then Grandmaster Sexay goes, hits a splash. And then B Squared falls out of the corner. And then Rikishi's the last one to go. So he goes, he hits a splash on Stevie. Stevie immediately drops down and he's in position.
He has assumed the position. The stink face is a move. And we haven't covered Rikishi yet. The stink face is a move that grossed me out to no end as a child.
Well, yeah, I think we save it. I think we save it for the people.
It was the grossest thing in the world.
Very large Samoan man wearing a thong, putting his ass in your face.
We then get a Samoan drop by Rikishi to Goodfather. Bull Buchanan hits a scissor kick to Rikishi. And again, shout out to B Squared. Scissor kick is on point. It's on point.
Kick the shit out of his head.
Scotty sets Bull up for the worm. And speaking of people getting their head kicked off, what happens to Scotty as he's doing his little W-O-R-M?
Yeah, Scotty's he's hit the face buster. He's doing the whole situation, and Stevie Richards just comes through and like fucking Shawn Michaels super kicks this man clean in the jaw. You hear the sound, you hear everything.
Yeah.
He's done. He's out cold. 1, 2, 3, right to censor, win this match.
It's fantastic. Goodfather and Bo Buchanan would actually win the WWF Tag Team Championships, which are the only titles that Goodfather / Charles Wright would win in WWE. He would win this set of tag titles. He would win the IC title. That's it. And
he never won the hardcore.
Never won the hardcore title. If you go to his championships and accomplishments, he has IC title, World Tag Team Championship, Hall of Fame. That's it. And then he's got that trio from 92 of worst gimmick, worst feud, and most embarrassing wrestler. That's
I don't believe that.
They would win the titles against the Hardy Boys on the November 6th episode of Raw and then defend them across the pond in the UK at Rebellion 2000, Right to Censor with the Hardy Boys is our last match. The Hardy Boys, at this point in time, are the coolest sons of bitches on the planet.
Yes, they are.
Because the only people who could wear mesh shirts before Pretty Deadly and get away with it. And they did that. Like, they had all of the sauce. It was incredible. There's no Steven Richards with Right to Censor here, but they have Val Venus with the group at this point, which really be his precursor to being Chief Morley, which I thought was an underrated shit heel gimmick.
I do not remember Chief Morley.
He was the like assistant to Eric Bischoff for a long time.
Oh, no.
And he just went by Sean Morley, and he was insufferable. And everyone was like, you used to be a porn star. You forget that?
Hey, his finisher used to be called the Money Shot.
It still is, as we learn here, which is uncomfortable. What'd you think of this tag contest?
This was interesting. I mean, I didn't expect these teams to have as good a chemistry as they did, if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah.
Also, weird sequence for Jeff Hardy here. I think he legit got hurt at one point.
Yes, let's talk about that. So early on, the Hardys doing their like tandem offense are really good at it. Dual swing kicks to the outside, dual planches to Bull and Goodfather. We get Bull versus Jeff in the ring. Bull just like trying to beat him with right hand and some big strikes. But Jeff ends up on the apron, goes up top, leaps over Bull, head scissor takedown. You know, all this type of flippy shit that Jeff loves to do.
Yes. We love flippy shit around here.
Goodfather clotheslines him well as Bull distracts referee Teddy Long. Exciting to see Teddy in there. Go watch our draft of the best ever authority figures on YouTube.
Yes. And then give it a like.
And give it a like and a subscribe and all that fun stuff. Goodfather gets in and is working over Jeff. And then Jeff kind of collapses into Bull while running the ropes.
Yeah, and just leaves the ring. And then Matt comes in. There's been no tag. They were like, oh, there's a blind tag. There was no tag.
There was no tag. Lucha rules, essentially, at this point.
Yeah, it just doesn't matter. Tornado tag. Let's go. Matt sets up for a twist of fate. Goodfather goes off, grabs the belt. Matt sees him coming.
Yeah.
So he lets go of the twist of fate, ducks, and Goodfather absolutely murders B squared with the tag title.
He sure does. Then he hits the second rope leg drop. Goodfather pulls Matt out of the ring as he is doing the pin and runs him into the ring post. Goodfather then comes in. And again, heels mean you have a much more subdued move set. So he's not doing the whole train. He's not anything that. He's working the left arm of Matthew Hardy.
He's not rolling the fatty for this pimp daddy, but he is rolling the shit out of Matt Hardy's arm.
So he's wrenching it, working it for a long time. Bull comes back in, double head slam. Goodfather in. Matt hits him with a DDT. Goodfather stops the tag by doing like the bear hug thing because he's trying to get to Jeff. And then puts him in the corner and essentially goes for the hoe train. But at this point, it would be called the no train. Am I right? Your disappointing face means I'm right. So, the no train.
You would have been perfect for Right to Censor.
Yeah.
By the way, just we have to talk about how genuinely great they were at getting heat. Like, they had no redeemable qualities. Like, terrible, annoying-ass people. Like, not fun in-ring work. Awful theme. Awful outfits. Like, you know, I gotta commend the people. Like, this was good stuff by them to create a team that was genuinely despicable in all aspects.
I think my favorite thing is that their heat was rated E for everyone. They did not care. Like, they had problems with everybody up and down the roster. They could find something Austin wrong.
Austin Rock, yeah, Triple H.
They didn't give a good goddamn what you did. Tiger Ali Singh, come and get these hands. Like, they didn't care. So then we're back in the ring. Jeff with a hot tag. It's okay. It's not the best Jeff Hardy hot tag I've ever seen. Yeah.
He doesn't look right, though. No, you could see it.
He's been injured in some way. Big dropkick to Goodfather. Bull clotheslines for the Hind. Jeff hits a whisper in the wind off the top to both right censor members. And I was like, even if you're hurt, the fact that you're like, yeah, I could still get up and do this.
Poetry in motion to follow.
Yeah.
Dropkick to the balls. Matt then hits a twist of fate. Jeff hits a swanton. And the referee gets distracted in the corner by referee Evan Taylor Long. Because Matt and B-Squared are off in the corner fighting each other. And while he's got his back to the action in the middle, Valvinus goes up to the top. Hits a money shot right to the back of Jeff's head. Throws Goodfather right onto Jeff. Gets out of the ring. Teddy Long turns around. 1, 2, 3. Right to censor. Retains.
Right to censor would keep the title belts until Armageddon, where they lose them in a fatal four-way tag team match. I'm going to list two more teams in that match, and you try to guess the third, okay? Or the fourth. So obviously there's Right to Censor. There's the Hardy Boys. Or sorry, not the Hardy Boys. The Dudley Boys. There's Edge and Christian, who actually won the belts. There's one more tag team. Guess that tag team.
Oh, God. Is it a thrown together team?
Technically, yes.
Fuck.
I would consider them a thrown together team. They did last for longer than, I would say, your average thrown together team.
It's not Booker and... it can't be. It's 2000. No. Is it like Regal and someone?
It is Road Dogg and K-Quick. Got love from a boy, K-Quick. It's great. Wright was released from WWE December 2002. He would show up a number of times. He made an appearance in the 2002 Rumble as the Godfather. He made an appearance in the 2013 Rumble as the Godfather. He's been a big person on the convention circuit. He interrupted Theodore Long and Crystal Marshall's wedding in 2007. He stopped Viscera from proposing to Lillian Garcia in 2005, and he did, which is incredible when you think about it.
That's listen, Mabel's a he's listen. It's like I said, man, can't be Captain Savo.
What did you think?
You can join him.
Going and looking at the career, the Hall of Fame career, like I said, because he was inducted in 2016, the Hall of Fame career of Charles Wright. What did you think?
Just a guy who. It took a career that could have ended very poorly after Papa Shango.
Could have ended a couple of times.
Yeah, could have ended a couple of times. Even after Kama Mustafa. He turned it around. He became the Godfather and was legitimately one of the most over people on that roster. Went to Right to Censor, turned it completely, was still incredibly over, just in the negative way.
Yeah.
And, you know, he made a damn good career out of something that, you know, probably shouldn't. He was a bartender, you know, who.
And what a world he lives in now.
Had probably multiple WrestleMania matches, WWE Hall of Famer. He's just, he got as popular as it gets, man, without and reaching like, the tip top of the industry.
And a bunch of people who were like 25 to 55, if they saw him, they'd be like, I fucking loved you, man.
Yeah.
Like, they'd be like, I loved you. Or like I was little and I was scared of you because when you were Papa Shango, like, you were super scary. Like,
bro, roll a fatty for this pimp daddy. Like I said, man, just one of the best. It's my personal favorite. Like, the ranking that you gave me earlier, I had to put New Age Outlaw number one because it is number one.
It is.
But, like, I personally would prefer the Godfather one. Like, bro, like, everyone hop aboard the whole train.
You should go and follow the boys on social media. You should follow me on Twitter at @7gomes, @itsevangomes. Javier, where are you on Twitter?
On the bio of the main account. It's right there. It's @jmellosports. Click it. Hit follow. Just do it.
And of course, to follow the main account on Twitter, on Instagram, and here on YouTube if you are watching on YouTube at Crossbody of Work. You should go to YouTube if you aren't there right now, and you should go watch our Revisited series where we looked at Eddie Guerrero. You should watch our draft series. Our next one, like we said, is a mini-sode on Brawl for All. That'll be coming out on Wednesday after this.
And the content's always churning. The boys got ideas.
It just keeps going. Also, go to fullpresswrestling.com in order to see all of this week's matches. Our recommendation is going to be that Godfather Goldust match. It's a
yes,
hoot.
Yes, sir.
It's yes, definitely sir. Not the casket match. It's definitely not. Not that. Don't do that. Go to fullpressshop.com. Cop the merch. Support the boys. Javi's wearing one right now. I wear my Kofi Mania shirt because God bless Kofi Mania.
I'm a shill. I'm going to be wearing a podcast shirt on every episode.
It's pretty good. Also, like and subscribe whether you're listening to the podcast or watching on YouTube. Be sure to like, rate 5 stars. It helps the boys out tremendously as we continue to grow. Share it with one of your friends. I'm sure we've covered a wrestler in our 160-some-odd episodes that they like. So go and tell them to go back through the whole catalog and check out the boys. Next week, we've got somebody who is notable from Brawl for All for all the wrong reasons. That is on the watch list. We are covering the career of, I'm going to say, Japanese wrestling legend and American wrestler. That's it. Dr. Death Steve Williams.
Yes. Shout out to Steve Williams, man. I'm excited for that one. I'm excited
Somebody who I have seen 1,000 times in terms of the history books, but cannot say I've given a good, fair shake.
Oh,
I'm excited.
Man.
I'm excited to have my worldview changed on Dr. Death Steve Williams, because for a long time, the only thing I knew was big in Japan and got his shit rocked in Brawl for All.
I know you're excited to do a deep dive on that Wikipedia page.
Oh, it's going to be a good time. There's nothing I love more than the deep dive during the Wikipedia page, because you find some weird stuff. And is it all accurate? Probably not. But somebody has to review it, and that somebody is not me. So yeah. Well,
you also have to understand, like, I feel like it's better for the people that you're not uberly familiar with, because you're like, oh my God, oh, in 1975 when he was in high school, this guy like lost a toe fucking playing kickball. Like, what? You know, like, why is this on his Wikipedia page? I don't know, but now I know it.
What a weird thing. All right. It's time for everyone's favorite part of the podcast. Javier, any final words for the people?
This week on Life Advice with Javier, it actually involves plants.
Plants.
My mom's got a shit ton of plants at her apartment. It's like her whole thing. She doesn't want a pet. She just gets plants.
That's fair. I knew somebody like that. Yep.
So she's got like the little spray bottle. Yeah. You fill water and you just. When it comes to taking care of plants, be smart. Do some research on the plant that you just bought.
Yes.
Usually when you get them, let's say you're at a florist or whatever, just fucking ask. They'll tell you, but also just like ask. Write it down. Jot it down. Know exactly where you're putting these plants. They need light. Put them in a place that has a lot of light. Not just gets light, you know, when the sun reaches a certain point in the sky. No, I'm talking like consistent light throughout the day. If they are plants that don't require a lot of light, be smart. Put them somewhere that you don't really need to put a lot of light in. Like, have, if you're, especially if you're getting multiple plants, have them situated in different areas. Give them good soil. I don't know a lot about soil, but my mom clearly does. Get them good soil and make sure you're giving them water. Don't overwater them.
Listen to their watering instructions. Do not think you know everything about watering. Also, if you're like, oh, I'm someone who forgets to water them all the time, ask the nice people at the plant shops and they will show you which plants need the least water. And then
you can get one of those like little tube things that you just stick in the soil that waters them periodically.
Big tube people here. All right. Thanks for listening this week as we covered the career of Charles Wright from, you know, Papa Shango all the way to the good father and everything in between. We're back next week to talk about Dr. Death Steve Williams. We'll talk to you then.
Roll a fatty for this pimp daddy.